Today, have central banks done enough to grip inflation? Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Well, notice post covering finance and property news. Well, the central banker's love-in in Hong Kong this week was full of contradictions. Indeed, yesterday I featured the RBA's new governor's comments centered around her view that households were largely coping okay with the 4.25% rate hike. And my reaction was how out of touch she sounded with regard to real households. Now, after raising the cash rate this month to 4.35%, Ms. Bullock said that the tightening move was made to have more assurance inflation would return to target on schedule. The RBA has an annual inflation rate of 5.4%, returning to just below 3% by late 2025. Ms. Bullock said last month that the late 2025 timeline to return inflation to target was a reasonable tolerance, but we don't have a lot of tolerance for it to shift out. That's sort of the end of our tolerance, I think, she said. And she admitted on Tuesday that the bank was very uncertain about its inflation forecast. There are big ranges. Everyone sees the fan charts that a lot of central banks produce, and ours is no different. There's a wide range of uncertainties and experiences there. Now, it's worth noting that the International Monetary Fund this month said the Australian economy was running above capacity with low unemployment, sticky inflation and rising house prices, and so forecast a delay in local inflation returning to the 2-3% target until early 2026, which is slower than most other advanced economies. And they also warned federal government that the nation's infrastructure spend boom was also helping to push the economy beyond full capacity, requiring the Reserve Bank to increase interest rates further to tame inflation. But also attending the conference in Hong Kong and a speaker later in the day was the ex-governor Philip Lowe. Now, he's worried that central banks may not have increased interest rates high enough to control inflation and that cost of living help from governments adds to inflation. He said central banks, such as the RBA, will suffer a credibility hit if they fail to reach inflation targets by 2025. In his first public comments since stepping down as governor in September, Dr. Lowe told the conference in Hong Kong that strong job markets and weak productivity growth meant wages were growing at rates that were inconsistent with central bank inflation targets. I hope that most central banks have done enough, but I'm worried that they haven't. And it's doubly important that we pass this first inflation test, Dr. Lowe said. I still see plenty of upside risks to inflation.
Yeah, I think the coming years are going to be much more difficult than the previous years. And I think we're going to see a lot more variability in inflation than we've had for the last 30 years. Over the past 30 years, we all got used to the idea that central banks could control inflation within a very narrow range. I remember being in trouble in the press and with the politicians for missing the inflation target by 0.5%. I always felt like it lacked perspective. I think going forward, we're going to see a lot more variation in inflation. Philip touched on some of the reasons. More supply shocks, climate change, the adjustments in our energy system, geopolitics, and demographics. All those things mean that we're going to be hitting the steep part of the supply curve more often, or the supply curves are going to be moving around, and inflation's going to be more volatile. And we're going to have to get used to that. And this is why I think the current inflation test is so important, and so important we pass it. This is the first example of this more volatile inflation world. Many countries' inflation went to 10% or close to it. 5 years ago, people would have thought that was completely crazy, but it happened. And I don't think we're going to see 10% very often, but we're going to see more variability in inflation. Many countries now are saying that inflation won't get back to target until the end of 2025. That'll be 4 years of inflation above target. The cumulative deviation, the price level of those 4 years is very large. And if we push, or if central banks allow that timeline to be pushed out even further into 26, I think the community will rightly say, are they serious? And that'll be a problem if they do. So I think the central banks have to be able to convince people that inflation will return to target fairly soon. If they don't, then the next time inflation is going to be moved away from target, and there'll be plenty of examples of it, that people won't believe it'll come back, and that'll make the lives much harder. So I hope that most central banks have done enough, but I'm worried that they haven't, and it's doubly important that we pass this first inflation test. I still see plenty of upside risks to inflation. Labour markets are still pretty resilient. Unit labour cost growth in many countries is not consistent with the inflation target, partly because of weak productivity growth. So the wage system has to adjust to weaker productivity growth. It doesn't. If it doesn't, that means more inflation. And populations have become very upset at the cost of living pressures. I'm seeing in a lot of countries, governments say, well, that's very difficult, and let me help you out. That tends to add to inflation as well. So there's still plenty of risk, but it's doubly important that no matter what mandate you have, that we pass this inflation test, the first test of this war where inflation moves around a lot more than kind of half to 1%, which is what we used to worry about. Now we're worrying about 3% or 4% movements.
Governments were responding to anger over the cost of living by providing financial assistance, but this could actually be counterproductive. I'm seeing in a lot of countries, government will say, well, that's very difficult, let me help you out. That tends to lead to inflation as well, he said. In fact, the Albanese government has offered about $23 billion in cost of living assistance, such as for energy bill relief, childcare subsidies, cheaper medicines, and rent assistance, they say without putting upward pressure on inflation. And the latest, if wobbly, monthly data from the ABS showed that the price index rose 4.9% in the 12 months to October. And the ABS said the 4.9% increase is down from 5.6% in September and below the peak of 8.4% in December 2022. But as we'll see, the number was lower thanks partly to government intervention, which of course means higher spending later. The most significant contributors to the October annual increase were housing up 6.1%, food and non-alcoholic beverages up 5.3%, and transport up 5.9%. Now, stripping out some of those volatile price changes like automotive fuel, fruit and vegetables, and holiday travel, the underlying or core indicator was 5.1%, which is lower than the 5.5% in September. The annual increase for housing of 6.1% was lower than the 7.2% increase in September, and new dwelling prices rose 4.7%, which is the lowest annual rise since August 2021, as building material price increases continue to ease, reflecting improved supply conditions. Rent prices rose 6.6% in the 12 months to October due to low vacancy rates and a tight rental market. And they said that the annual rise in rents is lower than the rise of 7.6% in September, largely due to the increase in Commonwealth rent assistance, which took effect on the 20th of September 2023, and reduced rents for eligible tenants. Excluding the changes to rent assistance, rents would have increased 8.3% in the 12 months to October, which of course would have pushed the CPI up. Electricity prices rose 10.1% in the 12 months to October, reflecting increases in wholesale prices from annual price reviews in July 2023. But electricity prices have been partially offset by the introduction of the Energy Bill Relief Fund rebates, again for eligible households from July. Electricity prices have risen 8.4% since June 23. Excluding those rebates, electricity prices would have increased 18.8% over this period, the ABS said. Now, there was a reduction in automotive fuel prices, which were at 8.6% higher in October compared to 12 months ago due to the higher global oil prices. That was down from the annual increase of 19.7% in September. And the reinstatement of the full fuel excise tax to 46 cents per litre on the 30th of September 2022 contributed to the annual increase in September 2023, but not in October 2023, and this combined with a monthly fall of 2.9% did reduce the annual rise for automotive fuel. Food and non-alcoholic beverages rose 5.3% in the 12 months to October, up from 4.7% in September. And they said, while annual inflation continues to ease across most food categories, fruit and vegetable prices are higher this month compared to 12 months ago, driven by price rises for melons and bananas. So my point is this. Have central banks done enough? Probably not. Of course, the markets are expecting rate cuts early next year. I think they're out of kilter with what's really going on. And I actually think Phil Lowe is probably calling it right. Remember, of course, that when he was in situ in the Reserve Bank, he was under considerable political pressure to not put the rates up. But now I guess he can speak a little more freely, which of course does beg the question, will we see high interest rates in Australia in the months ahead, as the IMF is suggesting, and as Phil Lowe, I think, is hinting at? Well, possibly so. But even if rates don't go higher from this point, they're unlikely to come down as quickly as the markets are expecting, which means, of course, more pressure on households into the medium term. And if Phil Lowe is also right that inflation from this point forward is going to be significantly more volatile, that means that mortgage rates are going to be more volatile too, which is something to bear in mind, bearing in mind we had a decade plus of lowering rates and easier money for mortgages. Well, maybe that era is over too, which, by the way, might also have an impact in the negative sense on home prices. So the game is not over, and probably central banks will have to do more than the markets are expecting.
But certainly in the pricing, the forward pricing for future monetary policy was that we would be at peak and likely be easing sometime next calendar year, second half. That was broadly where market pricing was. A lot of that was driven from not just domestic factors, but also internationally. You know, the view that markets are saying we must be near the end of a tightening cycle globally. I want to be first to pick the next easing. And so you've seen this repeat behaviour of markets being updated by central banks and then over time trying to price in the next cut. We've been adamant. If you look, the only one who wasn't surprised are ourselves. We have been projecting for some time now to be holding at least the official cash rate at these levels through calendar next year. So, you know, markets make markets, and we are providing our update into their decision making.
Now, if you're buying your home in Sydney's contentious market, you don't need to stand alone. This is the time you need to have Edwin Almeida from Ribbon Property Consultants standing alongside you. Buying a property is both challenging and adversarial. The vendor has a professional on their side. Emotions run high, price discovery and price transparency are hard to find, and then there's the wasted time and financial investments that you make. Edwin understands your needs. So why not engage a licensed professional to stand alongside you? With RPC, you know you have experience, knowledge, and master negotiators looking after your best interests. So shoot Ribbon an email at info@ribbonproperty.com.au. And if you use the promo code DFAWTW/Martin, you can get a 10% discount offer. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.